in order to prevent calling from contacting the people, and to get somebody else to help or something, to help the But I didn't think there was any struggle within the LSP itself, because everybody felt that Calvin had to be in Parliament. But of course, they did not realize that it was going to be a difficult job. They thought that because of Calvin's general political stature, he would be the best candidate also. That was not true. They refused to understand some of the basic forces operating in the interest.
But is it generally correct to say that when nominating candidates, parties tend to choose a candidate from the dominant class group in the area?
Generally it is wise to do so. Because even though caste may not be the decisive factor, it is certainly a factor that has to be considered. And if you want an election, to win an election, you must seek to win every possible vote.
But isn't it also true that there are both parties have hardcore support, which is irrespective of caste?
Yes, I think. But you generally find that both parties put forward candidates from the middle of the caste in the election.
It is notable that at Agarwalsa and other not notable, but I know that in Agarwalsa and other by-elections, most parties had priests on the platform as per usual. But at Selmanulla they didn't. Is there any significance in that sort of thing?
Well, I did not notice that. But generally I think it is possible to say that the role of the priest is becoming less and less important in winning parliamentary elections. Because I think, rather cynically, both sides have exploited the priesthood and more or less left it in an empty shell. Regrettable in many ways, perhaps.
And perhaps the priest balance is better now.
Which is also important in the context of what we have been discussing. It shows that some kind of equilibrium has returned in the cultural environment as between the traditional, the Sinhala-speaking intelligentsia and the Western-oriented intelligence, that the tension which made this a live issue in every critical situation has decreased very much.
Is that interesting? Any other kinds of
also, I think the lesser role played by the teachers, the village teachers, and the Ayurvedic village teachers, they are still important factors. The village teacher is still the real representative of the intelligentsia of the village, and therefore he has a certain importance. But, you know, what they call the Pancha Maha Balavegya, the Veda Mahatmya, the teacher, the priest, the worker, and the peasant, has really become the worker and the peasant with a number of assorted elements thrown in. I think the in that sense, the real backbone of the traditionalist agitation has caved in somewhat.
Also, hasn't it to some extent been replaced, A, by party organizations, and B, by increasing government functions which make the government servants, public servants at all levels, more important?
Yes, but at the same time, the public servant has also been terrorized by the present government, and therefore immunized as a factor in politics.
If they are terrorized, they would tend to work against them.
But they are afraid to do so. They shall at best go about solemnly and tell their confidants and so on. But they dare not come out and support an opposition in the way they did before 1965.
Didn't they do so in 1965?
In the 1965 election, many public servants campaigned openly.
For the SLP?
For the SLP. And of course, I suppose, some, for the UNP also. Because they had been promised political rights. So both sides. That was also perhaps a very important reason.
Don't both sides tend to try and use every trick in the trade, from impersonation to...
You have no choice about it. Because when you know that the other side is likely to impersonate, then if you don't impersonate, so many votes are going to the other side.
This suggests a certain improvement and sophistication of organization, because you have to...
Yes, certainly. But of course, we have had such a long a tradition of elections that...
Those in the process know
they have perfected their techniques.
Between the general trends, don't you think that 56, as confirmed by 60, was also a defeat for the Marxist movement?
I don't think so. In the first place, because the victories, the electoral victories in 1956 and 1965 were enabled by alliance with the Marxists. In other words, it was a conscious decision of the Marxists to support the forces that won the elections that enabled them to do so. And it was shown in the March elections in 1960 that without the united front between the SLFP and the Marxist Party, no victory was possible.
Yes, but with the united front, they got a straight majority.
Granted. But then it was the Marxist support that enabled that majority. Now, I don't agree with the position that has been taken by some of the Marxist parties, that because they were kept out of government, however bad faith it was or was not, I'm not addressing myself to that question now, because they were kept out of the government, it was a defeat for them. On the contrary, it should have been expected of them that in a game like this, after all, it is the relationship of power that dominates, that decides. And if a party has a majority to form a government on its own, unless it is really thinking in the long term, it is bound under sheer pressure from its supporters to form such a government by itself. Therefore, the LFSP, in my opinion, should not have gone in such an opposition. Having put a government in power, you don't go and oppose it. Having put a government in power, you support it, and you seek to influence it increasingly in your direction. Now, although the mistake was made of unrelenting opposition to the government once it was put in power, still I do not regard what happened as a defeat for the LFSP.
So I was thinking that in the Sinhalese area, we seem to have witnessed a bipolarization of the electorate in the sense that they either choose UNP or SLSP or a party in the library. In the same, and taking the total electorate, total parliamentary grouping, the NSSP and the CP have no hope of being, at least a single chance, of forming a government, of becoming the majority party.
Well, I agree. I personally do not think that the NSSP and the CP can never capture a majority by themselves. This is because it is to me a little far-fetched to believe that the villagers of Ceylon can consciously adhere to a program of socialism. On the other hand, it will always be necessary, if the road to socialism is through a majority in parliament, for the LSSP and the CP to find an ally which is not openly socialist, or completely socialist, or socialist in a principle, doctrinaire way, but which responds to the more primitive urges of people in the villages, and therefore can be regarded as believed as being an instrument which they can utilize. So, to me, the form of the worker peasant alliance in Ceylon is the alliance of the Marxist Party with the SLSP. That is the road to the village.
Yes, but that means that you are in the rear and not in the back?
Not necessarily. Because I think that even the SLSP has come a long way since 1946. It is a remarkable phenomenon, in my opinion, that the SLSP should have continued to work together with the Communist Party and the LSSP in a common front, in opposition.
Well, that's much easier than working together in
On the other hand, there is no need at all while in opposition to work together, when one can come together from time to time on common platforms.
This may be the propaganda of the capitalist press, but it would seem that at the moment the SLSP is showing some hesitancy or reluctance to form a common program.
Well, you see, when one talks of the SLSP, it is important to place one's finger on the real center of authority. The SLSP is not a democratic party which reflects the opinion of its membership in any way. The SLSP is...
Does the LSSP do that?
I should say. Very good. I would say that the SLSP is a rather conjunctural formation. Which reflects the moods of certain strata of our population. A general mood of antagonism to certain other strata, of expectation of certain concessions for itself, of a certain nostalgia for the past, and so on. Within the context of this subjective conjuncture, if I can use that word, it would be possible for a single leader or a combination of leaders, for a group or combination of groups to function, provided it shows itself capable of delivering something of the expectation of the master's interpreter. Now I think that this requires not merely faithfulness of representation, a democratic structure or a democratic leadership. What it requires is power, an ability to deliver the goods. So I think there is only one central power or authority in the SLFP that can deliver anything in the measurable future, and that is Mrs. Bandaranaike. Mm-hmm. So it is what she feels and thinks that ultimately passes for what the SLFP feels and thinks. Provided she does not make a break with this general mood which she symbolizes and articulates. Now,
hasn't she been reluctant to get...
No, here I think that one has to regard the kind of leader that Mrs. Bandaranaike is. She has learnt many things from her brief experience of politics. And one of the things that she has learnt is that by itself, it is too dangerous to attempt to use the SLFP for purposes of power. She would be at the mercy of the conflict of forces within her party. So just as she must not be the prisoner of any one group within her party, she must not be the prisoner of her party even, but must be able always to bring the independent power or influence of a party outside or a combination of parties outside in order to find her way. I think she has learnt this lesson very clearly. And she realizes that one of the things that brought her government down was the undependability of her followers. She had to threaten them at every stage with dissolution of parliament and going to the country in order to get them to toe the line. And even when she formed the coalition and found the one basis of stabilizing her authority, a number of them got together and kept her in the back.
Yes, in fact, to what extent do the Salagama community vote anti-SLFP now?
I would say they would still vote largely anti-SLFP.
Still? Very so in 65?
Yes, so very decisive in 65.
What about the count influence of people like Colvin and others?
Colvin, unfortunately, does not represent his community. The leadership of the Salagama community is worked through the moneyed elements among them. The people who can find jobs for others in the community, who can provide opportunities of enrichment for people in the community, and so on.
So doesn't Colvin have...
Colvin does not, because he unfortunately belongs to a party that is opposed to Colvin.
Yes,
so continuing with Mrs. B. So I think that so far as she is concerned, she is not going to place herself at the mercy of another group of 10 or 15 people who will do another city Mrs. Bandaranaike. But she has learned the mechanics of power, she has understood.
How do you prove that the LSSP is a democratic party?
Structurally, the leadership is elected. Is elected by an elaborate system of representation. The membership is organized in primary voting electorate. They send delegates. The delegates in conference elect the central committee. The central committee appoints the bureaus.
But there isn't
it in practice enable a few of the world sages to dominate, and don't they dominate?
Well, those are the imperfections of any system of representation. And one might say that there is here an aristocracy of the elite, which is nevertheless an aristocracy, and therefore it militates against democratic
constitution. And in fact, I wonder if this is a danger for the party in a sense that, like Nehru was a sort of banyan tree under which nothing grew.
This is a great problem of the party. Not only the leadership, in the local, the grassroots organization, they don't want to let new people in. They say, oh no, he has no experience of struggle. He doesn't understand Marxism, he is therefore utterly unfit to be admitted as a member.
Yeah, but I was wondering whether you lose some of the younger generation to the picking ring in particular because of
this. There's a danger there. But of course, the mass of the younger generation is still attracted. Like certainly students, strikes and so on. So the LSSP is really attracted.
How many are going to the LSSP are?
Very small. I don't think any other than that. Mm-hmm.
I think that with an older leadership, there is this danger that they'll think in terms of their lifetime and look for short-term benefits rather than for long-term benefits, which they might have looked at before, you say, 50 people.
Undoubtedly. This is the conservatism of the process of aging. Because one can't wait, one tends to...
Hello.
Hello.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
We're talking about structure of the LSSP. But how has the LSSP shown us a great deal of flexibility in the policies and programs? Now, for instance, the language switchover from 6 to 61. They seem to have reconciled that with the traditional Marxist doctrine by some form of casuistry, mentioning to all intents and purposes outside that it appears that they are going against certain Marxist principles.
Well, actually, I don't know whether what is involved is a Marxist principle.
Mm-hmm.
I personally consider that their formula of parity was extremely unreal. It is very difficult to sell a line in parliamentary politics with nothing else of parity between the two languages in a situation where the demand is for the doing away of English, doing away with English. Now, I think there was a certain failure to realize, in the way that Lohia realized in India, that the real problem involved was not Himalayan and Tamil, but English, the position of English. If they had recognized that and called for the doing away with English, and the substitution of English with Sinhala and Tamil in any relationship, they would have had a totally different impact on the situation. Now, they permitted themselves to be maneuvered into a position of choosing between Sinhala and Tamil, or refusing to choose between Sinhala and Tamil, and thereby negatively of rejecting Sinhala.
No, I agree that it was unreal, I mean, not pragmatic, but in the sense that they switched over, changed their line, as what had passed for their line earlier, around the 1960s, and at the same time allied themselves with the SLFP, including the Buddhist chauvinistic element, in the context. It would appear that it's against Marxist principles.
No, but then remember that in 1956, religious electorate was there.
Yes.
And it was after the Bat Alliance brought the MEP into power that they opposed the Single Only Act. In other words, they tended to separate certain parts of the program of the MEP and later of the SLSP from the general movement which the MEP or the SLSP led. They considered themselves as part of that movement or as being related to it. But they rejected certain demands or slogans of the movement. So I think it is one of the characteristic exaggerations of our press that is attempted to paint the formation of the coalition in 1964 as a complete reversal of their attitudes of 1960 and 1956.
No, I'm not thinking of the coalition, I was just thinking of the language policy and the change somewhere around 55-60. It had to be a change, there was a big debate in the party circles on this. That allied with what appeared to be a change of policy was the plantation policy, which would seem to be going against certain of their certainly a unity of the poetry. There is no unity, but they have to recognize this change.
Well, I think that this was really a very difficult problem for the entire movement in Ceylon, especially with the early successes that the SSP had in organizing the plantation workers and the idealization of the plantation proletariat as being the most maintained section of the proletariat and so on.
Colin still
maintains that. Yes. He still
maintains that. He says that the they were
Very
really militant in 1940-41,
I think he still has
a place in his heart for that
struggle. Yes, there was the militancy, there's no doubt. Okay. Now, the point was how to tackle this problem of anti-Indian agitation in Ceylon, denying the plantation workers their rights as a minority. So I think that here too, the trouble of the LSSP, looking back on it, was the lack of a Marxist approach, rather than the taking of a Marxist approach at that time and a reversal later. The Marxists would have analyzed the situation as the problem of a struggle for minority rights on the part of a primarily proletarian grouping, rather than as the struggle of a proletarian element for state power. In other words, the consciousness of belonging to a minority was going to override the consciousness of belonging to the proletariat, or the nationwide working class, in the mind of the plantation workers, until the problem of their minority rights was solved.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a Marxist, I would have, if I had properly analyzed the situation at that time, regarded the plantation workers as destined to go through a phase in which they will fight for rights as a minority.
Yes. Fair enough, but then the 56 movement symbolized more in fact the movement which would seem to have denied the minority rights. It had already begun earlier.
It began earlier with the movement of
disfranchisement. But 56 would have seemed to confirm that and going on further.
Isn't it true that both Vandaman and Gandhi were in some way allied with the SLSP or the SLSP government right through the state? So
yes,
there was the antagonism of the SLSP to the plantation
workers.
But
Singhala only.
Yes, but they Singhala only with right for the minority.
Well, more on the theoretical than the practical.
Yes, granted, the position was weak, but they did not break through. The plantation was there. In the way that Mrs. Badalaka broke in 1964. In my opinion, she made a very bad mistake. She was very badly advised by Intudias of this whole crowd, about taking up this Indian problem as a question, and then making a bid for Sinhal support by raising the cry of separate electorate. It was at that stage that she broke with Thondamal. And Thondamal, really, before he went over completely to the US, he was waiting for some possibility of re-establishing the land. Mrs. Badalaka refused to feed him. She wouldn't allow him to come and meet her anymore.
Any
comments?
Yes,
sir.
But
yeah, I mean, we don't know you. The whole scenario.
But
I think
this is one of the major reasons for
the reason.
In the Canadian
area,
you may
not
have
one or two more.
Giving
this, you mean what was marginal, but why?
Yes, it was critical.
But I'm still not satisfied that this doesn't go against what is called classical Marxist-Leninism.
I don't think it does. After all, do you remember the famous debate of the rights of nationality, of the Stalin thesis and the Lenin's endorsement of them and so on in the early stages of the Bolshevik government in Russia?
What about the enfranchisement of more Indians? Wouldn't the SLFP, LSFP alliance be against that?
But I think that one has to be very careful about this problem. I think it is in parliamentary politics, it is inadvisable many times to state one's whole position. One has to proceed cautiously.
Right, the point I'm making is this, UNP, dominated by single standard consideration, disfranchised these elements.
Yes.
And the LSFP opposed that at that right. Stage.
Yes.
Implying that they would want more all of them to be enfranchised.
Yes.
But now, they don't want all of them to be enfranchised.
I don't think that they don't want. But at this stage, to put forward the slogan, that all plantation workers should be enfranchised, I think would be disastrous.
Yes, I agree it would be disastrous from a pragmatic point of view.
Yes. But eventually, those who work must have the vote, surely.
Yes, but that's the point I'm getting at. There is a certain flexibility
But remember, even Mrs. Badalaka promised to enfranchise everybody who would remain here.
Yes.
As the non-citizens. But she said they should form separate electorates. The agreement with the government of India was that those who, that a certain number should be admitted to Indian citizenship and repatriated over a period of 15 years.
In 1930s, there was a standard here that those who stay here should be given voting rights. So that should be backed off. Now, after that, my impression towards that came that there wasn't such big a deviation as they have made out to be. I think that people should be doing it. And I think there should be good to go. What was the exact LS-59 during 47-55?
Oh, it was during 40.
They
opposed the, what they call the Citizenship Act.
Citizenship Act, which tended to restrict the granting of...
They opposed because it was very strict.
Mm-hmm.
But they always stuck to this point.
Oh, that's...
That's written by understanding.
This,
that's give the pressure to add money. Don't be that bigger. But let the
rest of them
go.
Yes, they...
And that was the basic standard for the elites. The thing is that in 64 it seems a very big rebuff.
Mm-hmm.
But correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, then I think the provincial stand that they took all this one ban on immigration.
That was
there. That was there, very firm. Then, admit as many as possible to citizenship. Those who remain here should be done with citizenship.
Let's
have a good repatriation.
Coming back to the, my point about policy changes, you know, especially now speaking from the party, this debate within parties and what was present in the public, they seem to try and justify this on the basis of temporary experience and one step backwards so that we can later take two steps forward. This seems to be a certain kind of jugglery imposed by certain doctrines. And in fact, I don't see why you have to be tied to these doctrines, why you don't discard them and develop your own form of Titoism or Prayerism or whatever it is.
I just, in fact, my criticism of the other speech would be complete lack of doctrine. Give it its doctrine. Today, I challenge you to show me any statement of policy that is worked out with reference to some quoted principles. Everything is much too
big and general.
And I would say, determined by the necessities of the moment.
Isn't that more effective?
Yes and no. Because it is also making the structure and outlook of the party looser and more vague and indeterminate.
I don't know if this is fair criticism, but whatever the form of whatever the economic structure, whether it's a socialistic or capitalistic one, there would be problems of marketing, distribution, so on and so forth. And the LSSP hasn't made any contribution that I know of in these spheres. These are details, admittedly, but I don't know whether you can answer saying we can think of these when you come to power, but I don't see why you can't make a contribution in the thinking in these spheres.
Well, I would say that the trouble with the LSSP is an overemphasized practicality or pragmatism. They're primarily concerned with doing things and with the task of the moment of agitation, of organization and so on. As you will see, they have never had a decent journal, especially in English, except for a brief period, the Sidney Mansinger's paper, what do they call it, the socialist something.
Yeah, socialist.
Which for a time published a few articles written by KDS and Dorit and so on. Apart from that, they've never had a journal in which they've attempted to discuss problems, to educate their following and their membership and so on. And I think that this is the condition of all parliamentary parties.
What about the Peking Ring and the Moscow Ring? I'm interested to know whether the Peking Ring is making inroads into LSP or LSSP, whether they are improving their strength.
Well, everybody is attempting to make inroads into everybody else. This is the process of politics. But I think basically these three formations are there, and it's not easy to knock any of them out.
But who would you say is capturing the allegiance of the younger generation who are coming into the arena?
Judged by the university students. The intelligence elements in the outstation town.
What about the tenants? Didn't you lose a considerable quantum of...
Admittedly. But I think that was not a very great loss. Because, really, from the angle of parliamentary processes, the tenants used the left movement more than the other way about. They used the left movement, for instance. In Colombo, the Tamil middle class would vote for the left. But in Jaffna, or in the Tamil area, none of them would vote for the left, or very few of them would vote for the left. They would always vote for a more conservative party, which was purely Tamil. In other words, the support of the left movement in Colombo, and it was largely in Colombo, was purely the attitude of a minority seeking to find the balance in the general power struggle taking place between minority and majority and so on in the country. Now, the LSSP did not understand this process, and it believed that because it attracted the support of some of the Tamil middle class elements in the town, it could gradually widen that support until it could win the support of the Tamil middle classes in Jaffna. So that was never going to come about. In the same way as in the case of the estate workers, there was a minority problem here, which had to be resolved as a minority problem. And the solution for that would have to be offered on the level of national politics before the minorities could support a purely class formation, like the Marxist Party.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I was getting at. They were looking at it in a traditional Marxist sense.
But that was not
instead of looking at it in a realistic manner.
But that was not a Marxist approach.
Why did you say that?
Because, in my opinion, Marxism understands the mechanics of power.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of Marxism is it that is known?
With reference to the panel, would you say that the GCSU strike of 47 wasn't largely a panel-inspired one? Certainly the leadership was largely panel, except for the government. Would that come within your category of using the left movement?
No, that was purely trading and struggle. Mm-hmm. And even today, the GCSU does have a very considerable panel element within it. Because there are a very large proportion of Tamils among the class. The class is the public service.
Does that mean that the LSSP has a fair proportion of Tamils?
I wouldn't say so. Because the GCSU overwhelmingly, I think, is with the LSSP rather than with the LSSP.
To what extent does the UNP have working class support, urban working class?
Not really, I think. In as much as the composition of the working class is also really the UNP, for instance, injects all kinds of queer elements into the working class by enrolling them in their corporations and so on. Well, they would for a time at least support the UNP. And in opposition, JR did the test to organize some of these lessons that I don't think he got very far.
Premadasan?
I don't think he got the purely working class support. But generally in that Colombo area, he had a certain influence. And perhaps individual workers did support him on the UNP. But not as a book, not as a class, not as an organized body.
No, I just want to know whether you can equate the working class with urban working class with the left party.
By and large, I think so. Because the real base of the left party is the working class.
Yes, agreed, that's in relation to their electoral support, but just taking a working urban working class as a sector, I was wondering what amount of support the UNP has. taking into account various other factors like Catholic working class and, you know, so on and so forth.
Well, I suppose a certain number among the Catholic workers would support the ELP. But I know from the experience of our election campaign in Morocco during the last election that many Catholic and Christian elements in the working class, and there are such a number in Morocco, they all supported us.
Mm-hmm. It would apply to Nigama too, but
I think it would apply to Nigama too. Mm-hmm.
Since you have lost some Tamil members, how would you explain the fact that some haven't left, there are some still within the region?
Well, I would say that is the more ideological element, for various reasons perhaps, but it has taken an ideological position. And in Jaffna, the real base of the LSP is one of the minority castes.
Which one?
The people who are led by our Nagarika. What are they called? They are not at the bottom, very bottom,
mm-hmm.
but somewhere midway,
mm-hmm.
but they are also different caste.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is the base of the movement in Jaffna. Similarly, the Communist Party also. Did I support my mother? The Velayas, I don't think, support her. The Velayas support us, I think, are other.
End of interview.